Hi, and welcome to The Brand Called You. This is a global podcast where we talk to some of the world's most fascinating thought leaders. And to be perfectly honest, today is no exception. I am kind of fangirling over my guest today, Elizabeth Holtzman. I grew up in the 60s and the 70s, and I was, what can I say, a massive fan of hers. I watched as she took on the entire male establishment, the entire Republican Party. I watched as she was the female voice of the Judiciary Committee during the Watergate trials, as she grilled Gerald Ford about why he pardoned Nixon, as she grilled the military as to why they were spending so much money after the Vietnam War on armaments, as she grilled the US government as to why they were harboring Nazi war criminals. And I watched as she became the first female controller of New York City, the first female district attorney. I mean, I don't know, the list goes on and on. I'm so excited. I can't thank you enough for doing the show. Welcome, welcome, Liz Holtzman. Also have another special guest today, my new co-host for this special edition. Now, if it's any election cycle, it doesn't matter which one, and you turn on pretty much any talk show, MSNBC, CNN, you're likely to see my co-host, Hank Scheinkopf, who is one of the country's leading campaign strategists. There's so many people he's represented. I can't say them all, but I'm going to name drop a few. Former President Bill Clinton, he worked on his campaign, Mayor Bloomberg, and our guest today, Elizabeth Holtzman. So welcome, Hank Scheinkopf, our special guest host. I'm super excited. I'm obviously a political junkie in hiding, but I just wanted to start. Is it all right if I call you Liz
instead of Elizabeth?
I want to start by really your latest, feat, which is at 80 years old deciding to run for Congress. I'm 61. I can barely climb up the stairs. I don't know. I can imagine where you get the physical energy because I know you're a kayaker, but I guess I'm wondering what really drove you in a kind of spiritual way. What was your motivating force for getting up and dusting off, you know, everything and starting again in that way?
Okay, well, before I answer your question, I just want to say thank you to you for having me on this program. And secondly, for your very kind comments. And it's a real special pleasure to be with Hank Scheinkopf. We haven't seen each other in a while, but as you said in your intro, he is an astute observer of the political scene and analyst of it as anyone I know. So it's a great pleasure to see you again, Hank, and to
be
in your company.
Thank you very much.
And with regard to your question, really what drove me to this was Alito's draft decision on abortion. And when I read that, I stayed up late at night reading the whole decision. I got really angry because it wasn't just that he was going to stop abortion. That was bad enough. And say that governments could control women's bodies, bad enough. But the reasoning behind it was going to spell trouble for women and ultimately for all people in this country. Because basically what Alito was saying was, I'm going to use these jurists who wrote in the 1700s, in the 1600s, who hated women, who thought women could be beaten, forget abortion, that they could be beaten by their husbands, raped by their husbands, they didn't own property, they couldn't vote, they had no rights. These are the people who were going to determine how women's rights were going to be viewed in the 21st century. I said, you can't do that. We're human beings. You can't use misogynists, bigots, Stone Age thinkers to determine our rights today. And they could do that with anybody, and the court could do that with anybody. And I said, I'm not sitting on the sidelines. I'm not a sidelines person. I got off the sidelines to go down south in the early days of the civil rights movement to work for an African-American civil rights attorney. I took on a lot of other causes, and this was a cause that was huge to me. And I just said, I'm not sitting on the sidelines. And I had the experience. I was in Congress for 8 years. I was chair of a subcommittee. I know how to write legislation. I know how to take on the government. I know how to take on the Supreme Court. I'm not afraid to to open my mouth, and I've got nothing to lose. So I thought this was the time for me, but it wasn't.
But I mean, you're not afraid to take on the elements as they be, but I've never seen this kind of Republican Party. There's nothing that could prepare me for this level of crazy, I think.
Well, that's true. I mean, they really, many of them espouse fascist ideas. They, in the end, it's the ends justify the means, and they have no patience with democracy. They have no patience with other people's points of view with which they don't agree. They don't have no patience with the majority that differs from them. They have no patience with trying to work out how we're going to run the country, how we're going to move forward. What they want is what they want, no matter what anyone else says. So as Trump said, the election is not rigged if I win.
Well, you know,
it's heads I win, tails you lose.
The eminent historian Timothy Snyder says it best, you know, the first victim of authoritarianism is truth. And what we're seeing worldwide by the rise of authoritarian figures, the demise of democracy in many cases, slow and steady, and the destruction of truth, the rewriting of history and present moments using media to ensure that, like Orban has done in Hungary, that his truth is the only truth. Bolsonaro in Brazil, I mean, you go on and on. The guy in Belarus is about to let the Russians use his country as a staging ground for more destruction in that region. And that on, you can go in Trump. I mean, it's the guy in Obrador. I mean, you can go on and on and on. They're coming up and they're taking people's freedom with them. And and there's an economic component too. I mean, if you look at the former Prime Minister Truss in England, who's created a historical record of getting bounced out in 44 days, she tried to do what Trump did to the economic system in England that he did to us in the tax bill, which empowered the most rich of our population, further increasing authoritarian activity because they get money from them to run their campaigns. Good news is that even the conservatives in Britain said, no, you can't do that. But we are stupid in the United States. We're going to watch our freedom dissipate in the series of lies and a rewriting of history that never existed. It's just extraordinary to watch.
All right. And I think, Hank, you make an excellent point. I completely agree with you. And that's another reason that I was going to run for Congress, or that I did run for Congress, is because I wasn't afraid to speak out. I mean, when I was, let's take the Nazi war criminals. I mean, Nazi war criminals had been in this country for 40 years and no one did anything about it. They didn't care to find out about it. And some of them who might've had an inkling were afraid or didn't do anything. I wasn't afraid to take them on.
Why were you not afraid?
I don't know. I think it's in my genes. I just have to say my greatest example in my life of courage is my grandfather. They lived in a small city in Ukraine. And they lived through pogroms. And my grandfather was well and off to live in a house on the street where they were the only Jewish family. So the Bukramchiks never came through that house. But my grandfather opened his house up to Jews who were running from the ghetto to hide from the Bukramchiks. And my mom tells me how scared she was. He exposed his whole family and his own life to danger, but he opened his house because he couldn't do otherwise. And so I never was taught to be afraid.
You know, I'm the daughter.
That was my example.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm the daughter of a Holocaust survivor from a small town in the Ukraine. And she taught me the exact opposite, which is that, you know, evil's lurking around every corner and stay in hiding. So when I see somebody who has the audacity not to, to transcend those fears, I'm very impressed. But even
my grandfather also thought evil was lurking in many, many places. He had no optimistic view of society, but he knew you had to stand up.
But the truth is, evil is lurking. I mean, and we have to understand that. If you look at this schism in the Republican Party, this is not new. It's been going on since the late 40s. It's best demonstrated by immigration policy. I mean, the great book on this is David Nassau, The Last Million. And what he talks about, you know, really clearly is that the admission of Nazi war criminals into the United States was far more important to the Republicans who controlled that committee when the House shifted in 46, was more important than bringing Jews who had suffered and were living in DP camps in the American sector in Europe. It is a disgrace. Now we've done the same thing again and again and again. And the immigration thing is really a canard to hide the most barbaric, anti-Semitic, anti-immigrant, anti-new idea kind of infusion into this country. And now we're seeing that writ large, and it's now become less about migrants, frankly, and more about other intellectuals. We've had similar experiences, McCarthyism, the Palmer raids, and we can go on and on. But this has a greater intensity to it. And why we needed people like Liz Holtzman in government, the intensity has entirely to do with the internet and the capacity to spread lies and fictions in seconds.
So, yeah, I mean, but that's right. What I want to get at, which is, I mean, how, Liz, I mean, today's campaign, number one, were you not subjected to, you know, threats in a much bigger way due to the internet? And also, had you taken the campaign further, would you not have had to completely use the internet in ways that you had never done before in order to conceivably reach constituents?
Well, yes, I was learning how to use social media in a way I never had. So that's true. But I wasn't worried about threats. I mean, I had threats when I was in Congress, and I just do my job and go forward. I'm not being completely oblivious because I haven't been a victim of crime. You've got to pay a lot of attention to what's going on around you, but still you have to go forward. And it's one thing that I discovered in Congress is that one person can make a difference, and you can never say give up, because as I mentioned, the Nazi war criminals is one example, but getting the Equal Rights Amendment, ratification deadline extended was something else I did. Against all odds, Phyllis Schlafly and the extreme right wing were there, but we outmaneuvered them, outmaneuvered the insurance companies on redlining of houses. So one person can make a difference if you're really out there in front and you work hard. Not saying all the time, not even saying most of the time, but some of the time you can. And Hank is right. We're in a situation where, you know, the village idiot used to be restricted to the village. Now the village idiot can talk to the whole world, and you have people believing them. I mean, you have someone like Marjorie Taylor Greene saying that Jews shot laser beams into forest fire to create forest fires in California, and she's sitting in the U.S. Congress. I mean, how do you have people like that sitting in Congress? They can't even understand what the basic issues are to make decisions, but they've got wacko ideas that are, you know, lunacy. So it's a very hard time that we're dealing with now.
Well, you know,
but you can't give up, and you have to have people who are willing to rock the boat. And sometimes the leaders won't even say what they have to say, because they're too afraid to rock the boat too.
Excuse me. I also, you know, I have a cousin who's a pretty passionate Trumper, and he's a wonderful guy, but I noticed that there is no amount of information that I can try to give him that will ever penetrate, that he has kind of got aggressive blinders on. He absolutely has decided what information will come in. And that's the part I find very challenging. I don't know how you penetrate.
When Nixon left the White House and he was universally attacked by top Republicans and disgraced, he left in disgrace. There was still 23% of the American people, I forget, maybe it was 24, somewhere around there, who loved him. Okay, you're never going to convince all the people all the time, but you have to be able to get through to a majority. That's, I think, what Karl Rove discovered. Stalin and Hitler thought you had to control everyone's mind. What Karl Rove discovered was you just needed an electoral college majority. That's a different story, not such a big problem. Okay, so that's a smaller universe to deal with. We can deal with that too. And
It's interesting. If you look at that, you know, Liz is right. Rove was more humanitarian, if you want to be really kind about it, than the present group of people, the gangsters that ran the last election. I mean, and they were with Trump at the end. They, including Roger Stone, who, you know, I've known through the years, they had absolutely no sense and no moral sense about how this was to be done. And there were no limits. Rove had limits. It was to be done within the legal framework of the system. The other guys—
Well, I don't know. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that he understood something, which is that you can influence policy without controlling everyone's mind. So we don't have to get the 23% who still supported Nixon after everyone else totally disgraced him. And he basically had been accused, and the evidence was overwhelming, that he had committed not just crimes, but also abuses of power. The 23% who were just maybe impenetrable on issues. Maybe they don't understand, they don't pay enough attention to the news, they don't have the time to do it, or they can't understand. There are various reasons, but I don't think you have to get everybody to support you. So your uncle, your relative, you can't convince him. Okay, we can't get caught up in that. We have to be thinking about how we can get to the majority of people and make sure they have the facts. And I think one of the things that's really affected us, and you probably know more about this than I do, Hank, is the the attrition of the fairness doctrine. So you don't have to put, used to be that you had to put on kind of both sides of the issue. Right. Now it doesn't happen that way.
It's an outrageous. I mean, whether it is on the right or the left, I mean, what MSNBC did to you, frankly, by putting the Goldman up there, your opponent in that race, and only you and he were mentioned, as I recall, in the New York Times endorsement in the race, was absolutely despicable. And it shows us that, again, people who, that we've lost a certain boundary of what is appropriate behavior. The rules change depending upon who's got the cash and who they think will be the victor. And they throw a bone to people who have certain, you know, who are good, decent people, like Liz Holtzman in this case, getting the mention of the thing, but was really not, it was a setup, okay? If you look at the Times particularly, it's horrendous. They endorsed an era of women and the empowerment of women. In three separate races, they endorsed men with all kinds of ridiculous ideas. Now, I'm a Holzman fan, so it doesn't matter. We need somebody with guts to take on everybody and to say, drop dead if necessary, and you can't do this to democratic systems. She would have been perfect, and I wrote about it, you know? My basic opinion hasn't changed. Now, MSNBC violated the fairness doctrine, and I think it gave a leg up on the left to Goldman, who we don't even know about. Holzman would have been a much better congressperson.
Yeah, they had him on TV every single night. And then we had an attorney who was volunteering, and he spoke with them, and they took him off the last, like, 4 days. But then CNN put him on as a contributor, I mean, without giving any shot to anybody else. But the thing is that, and that has to change, because you have to, that's one of the ways that people don't get all the facts, and it's wrong. It's the ends, it's something has to be done about the fairness doctrine. But this is what I want to say about boat rocking. One of the reasons I wanted to run for Congress was because of Alito's decision and because of the threat to abortion in the Supreme Court. What were people saying even in this campaign for Congress that they wanted to do? The only suggestion that came up, aside from what I was proposing, was to enlarge the court. Maybe that's a good idea, maybe not, but it's not practical, because the Democrats would have to win 60 seats in the Senate. We'd be lucky to hold on to controlling it. We have to get another 10 seats, not gonna happen. Maybe we'll lose the House. We need to control the House. So it was not a practical idea. What's gonna be a practical idea that you can do right now? So one of the things I was suggesting was to have hearings, because the House, Democrats still control the House. They could have done some investigation of Clarence Thomas and of Brett Kavanaugh. Maybe something would come out, maybe nothing would come out. But here you had Clarence Thomas, the only vote to cover up documents that the January 6th committee was seeking. And his wife, as we know, is a cooperator of insurrectionists, illegal activity of the insurrectionists. And Brett Kavanaugh, the FBI investigation was never finished. I said, let's do something about that right now. Let's not wait 10 years. Let's do something now. Maybe the leadership in the House wasn't in favor of it. I don't really care about that. I don't care. You've got to bring the ideas out. You've got to fight for them. You've got to put it on the table. You've got to try to make things happen, not things that may be good ideas, but are not practical. So that's a difference. But people don't like boat rockers. I mean, the powers that be don't like boat rockers.
Do you portend, are you optimistic? Are you frightened for the next few years in America? I'm curious about.
Yes, I am very frightened. I'm even more frightened about the people who put their heads in the sand. I was on a panel of Harvard Law School alumni. And I said where our democracy is being threatened. And I was challenged over that and criticized for saying that, because how could I possibly say that? It's not true. Mm-hmm. But it is. We have, I mean, Hank summed it up perfectly. Lies, disinformation, and the Republican Party, which was a party, of course, I didn't always agree. I mean, I rarely agreed with their ideas, but at least you could have conversations with people. We were on the same, we were talking the same language. We're not talking the same language with the MAGA Republicans anymore. I mean, when you have election deniers, how can you talk the same language? And more than half of the candidates on the Republican side now, according to the Washington Post, are election deniers. But we, you know, Trump had the opportunity to challenge this, and he did in 61 courts, and they turned him down every single time. And that seems to have persuaded nobody. And the other thing that's ironic is that everybody who was elected along with Trump gets to stay in office. Nobody challenges them. I thought maybe the best thing to do would be to bring a lawsuit challenging everybody who was elected along, all the Republicans who were elected along with Trump, and say, you know, the election was a fraud, get them out. And then we would have seen something else happen. But, you know, it's crazy where we are now. And the threat is that if you fool with elections and you deprive and you end the tradition we've had, more or less, of fair and open, honest elections. I can't say it's always been perfect, but mostly that, and we try to have professional people doing that work of election counting, ballot counting. Then if we end that system and we have a system in which the Republicans can, or the MAGA Republicans can manipulate the outcome, then we've ended democracy, period. And that's not impossible to happen.
No, I mean, I'm actually speaking to you from Amsterdam, where I live part-time. And I mean, the only thing I can say is most Europeans are, you know, they've been through it historically, and it did pass. It took years and years, but they've seen the end and the reignition of democracies over the years. I think in some ways, we're such a young country that it sort of shocked us that it was happening. I guess I always was slightly more cynical, sadly, but it is very frightening.
Well, but the thing too is you can't just say, look at Europe as any kind of example here. Sweden just elected an extreme right-wing government.
Yes, they did.
Including, they didn't let this other party in, but that party basically controls it. It grows right out of the Nazi movement, not the would-be Nazi movement, the real Nazi movement.
As did Italy.
Correct.
But there's a larger question involved, which is also an American problem, a European problem, and a worldwide problem. You know, the research by social scientists, and there's a terrific guy at NYU's name, a nice long Polish name I can't pronounce, so I don't want to offend him. But the distillation of information is very clear. If you have extraordinarily increasing, rapidly increasing, or constant income variations that are so extreme as we've had in the United States since Ronald Reagan, you started it and we haven't recovered since. You have these extreme income variations, you tend to have chaos, which then allows the left to be in power. And then when the left can't deal with the chaos, which we're witnessing throughout the world, right-wing people come in and say, we can resolve the problem. And guess what? This is not a new phenomenon. And if you want to substitute new monarchists for fascists and then Nazis or whatever you want to call them, it's the same kind of problem. We refuse to deal with the economics. And so we get Trump. Trump is a response to half of the nation feeling absolutely alienated and being tired of being told by Los Angeles and New York what to do. Instead of instilling a new freedom in people, we're giving them the option out of democracy, which is to get into the streets and do whatever they want. We can't have it. It doesn't work. And the result is disastrous historically. I don't care where you go. Go back history to the beginning of it all. It's just not going to work out unless we can resolve these income issues. You want to have another Trump, keep this up and see what happens.
Well, and another thing too is how much influence the Russians are having on our elections in a surreptitious way. I mean, we know that they were financing Le Pen, the right wing in France. Mm-hmm. They were financing the right wing in Germany. I wouldn't be surprised if they were financing the right wing in Sweden. And they were financing, as we know, here in the United States, the pro-Trump forces too. So, and the Republicans have opposed any effort to have foreign contributions completely disclosed. So they still can do that. And we need to track it.
The America First people and Make America Great Again, and we don't need to be involved, which is the left argument coming up. We don't need to be involved in overseas issues. Is all ridiculous and is part of the same kind of movement to know nothingness, which results in tragic events in world history. It's not new.
And yet the two of you are still working on individual activities that you're very passionate about. So I guess before we end, I'd love to hear what both of you are. I know, Hank, you're working on crime issues now.
I'm working on them. I think, you know, it's a, if you read the Bible at all, there's a great line about shotrim, in Hebrew it's shotrim b'shoftim, which would be really not police, but yeah, police in modern Hebrew, and judges you need. You must have them to have order. That doesn't mean they're supposed to run wild. It means you have to have order. What the left is trying to do is to make things a little better. What the right is doing is saying, you want to have disorder? Well, we're going to clamp it down any way possible. That's an international movement. It is. The Russians are taking advantage of it because they want to destroy American influence in Europe, particularly, and the rest of the world on behalf of the Chinese, likely. This is dangerous stuff. What do you have to do to stop it? You got to get people to vote. You got to get people to think before they vote. And you have to get an electorate that says saving this nation and everything it represents is more important than individual desire.
And how about you, Liz? What are you, now that you're not running for Congress, tell me what you're currently passionately involved in.
Well, I'm very passionate about saving our democracy. So I've been trying to write a little bit about that and maybe write some more about that. And of course, women's rights. So those are things I'm still, I'm never going to give up on.
Working on another book? Or
maybe. But I'm writing some articles right now. So that's what I've been doing. Aside from my law practice.
Yeah. So in conclusion, can we leave listeners with any glimmer of hope or any recommendations for how they can get, you know, more involved? I'd love to hear your sage advice because we need it.
Well, I mean, you could look at these problems and say they're insurmountable and just turn away, get into bed, pull the covers over your head and say, I'm not having any part of this. But if we want a world where we have democracy flourish, we have to be involved. And it's going to be a harder struggle than we thought. I mean, Benjamin Franklin said, we created this republic if you can keep it. And he put the burden on every single one of us in the future, if you can keep it. So we have to keep it. And it's not an easy struggle. And I agree with what Hank said about how people, it's getting people to vote, but more important, getting them to understand what the issues are. One of the consequences of Reaganism and right-wingers in the United States is the attack on education. People have to be educated so that they know how to think critically. So that if somebody does, you know, wants to sell them snake oil, they know it's snake oil and it's not going to cure COVID. So, you know, that's the kind of thing people have to be trained to do. And critical thinking is something that you can't get without an education system. And ours is deteriorated. And that's a big problem for us.
Yeah, it is. Critical thinking skills are the basis for everything. Hank, what about you? Any last minute recommendations and suggestions for how listeners can do a small measure of effort?
Now, look, you want to help the world, you want to save democracy, you want to stop autocrats. That's really what we have to do so we can read what we want, meet who we want, live the way we want without interference. Start with Iran, support the people in the street, whatever you can do, get on the internet, make it work, get more people around the world. You know, the tragedy in New York City is that we had demonstrations in Washington against these fascists who call themselves very religious people, which they're not. In Iran, we had them, but New York is dead. The progressives failed, the so-called progressives failed. Get into the street. We did it to stop the war in Vietnam. We did it against all kinds of other acts. public voices raise loudly, force change.
Right. And also to get involved in this election, go out and vote. Go to, if you're living in New York City, go to neighboring states to canvass, whether it's New Hampshire or Pennsylvania, there are important races there. It's critical, critical, critical to come and vote now and to get out and campaign for, in my view, the Democratic ticket, or if there are Republicans who are not MAGA Republicans, that's fine too.
Listen, I can't thank you enough. It's been short, but very inspirational. Thank you both for your a lifetime of service and work. And it hasn't gone unappreciated or unmeasured by so many of us. Thank you so much for your participation. And let's keep our fingers crossed for the upcoming elections. So, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.